Good evening. I'm Nancy Nangeroni.
I'm Gordine McKenzie.
And this is Gender Talk. Again, this is Gender Talk Worldwide Radio that talks about transgenderism in the first person. Each week we bring you news, information, and exciting new voices that challenge our traditional view of gender and much more. Tonight we're going to tap into the pulse of Transgender Tapestry magazine editor and writer Dallas Denny, who will be telling us all about her upcoming run for office. She'll also fill us in on what we don't already know about Fantasia Fair and more. Then we'll be talking bisexuality with Boston's Bisexual Resource Center co-founder, Robin Oakes, who has co-edited a new book of... Send your question to question@gendertalk.com. Again, that's question@gendertalk.com. We'll do our best to answer it. And now we have our first guest waiting on the phone.
Yoo-hoo! We have Dallas Denny, who is a writer and an activist. She is chair of the planning committee for Fantasia Fair, the transgender community's longest-running event, and editor of IFGE's Transgender Tapestry Journal. Dallas lives in tiny Pine Lake, Georgia, that has a population of 661. And she let us know that Pine Lake lost its first police officer on Thursday when a routine traffic stop ran awry. And the man who was stopped was a fugitive from Wisconsin, shot the police officer, ran into the Pine Lake post office where he took his life only 5 to 10 minutes after Dallas had picked up her mail. And Dallas, who twice ran as an unsuccessfully for city council, has decided to once more throw her hat into the ring. Welcome back to Gender Talk, Dallas. How are you doing tonight?
Fine. Hi, Gordine. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Hey,
thank
Dallas,
you.
What I want to know, Dallas, why are you picking up mails in the post office?
Well, our town is so small
that we don't have
house delivery.
Oh.
So everyone in the community has to go to that little post office to get our mail from a box.
How scary.
All right.
So, it's very personal for everyone in this tiny little, usually peaceful town.
I guess. So, let me ask you a question about living in that little town. As a trans woman, and now you're running for city council, town council, whatever it is?
Yes.
Are you sort of well-known in the town? A town that size, usually we think of as sort of everybody knowing everybody else.
Well, yeah, everyone does know everybody else. It's actually a tiny little town right in the middle of Atlanta.
Oh, interesting.
It was founded in the 30s as a resort before there were any TVA lakes. So it's very much like a Girl Scout camp. There's little houses and trees and a beautiful lake, which is a park. And everyone knows each other, unlike... You know, I used to live 5 miles away from here, and I never knew anybody. And here I know several hundred people by name.
Wow. And this is in Atlanta?
Yes, it is. And there's a high percentage of gay, lesbian people here and two other trans folks here in this little town of 600 people.
Sounds like a delightful community.
It's been a lot of fun. So we were all shocked and saddened by Thursday's event.
Yeah. My goodness. And that was just somebody from out of state who just went crazy there.
Yeah, they just got stopped. And I had been thinking about running for council, and it just decided me.
Now, you've done that before, right? You've run for the council before?
Yeah, I did. We had some political difficulties. Every once in a while, a little town gets in a turmoil, and we did about 4 years ago when I ran. And I didn't win, but we got our mayor in that we wanted, and it's been calm since, and we were in danger of losing our charter.
Oh my gosh.
I'm running again basically because it seems to be ramping up again, maybe around issues of the police.
What kind of issues?
Well, the town has long had a reputation as a speed trap. And in fact, the city lived quite large during the 90s by stopping people that came through on our one little main artery through the town.
Oh, and writing expensive tickets.
We have scaled that way back down, and we're actually at a fairly good balance. But now the police seem to be sort of ramping up a little bit, and I just don't want that to happen. So I'm throwing my hat in the ring. And that was a consideration for me, is because when you're transgendered or transsexual, if you do anything of note, whether it's good or bad, or run for office, suddenly you become the story.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't particularly want to be the story. I mean, I'm not going to not run because I'll find my name in the papers again, but it, you know, it's annoying when that's not the issue.
Did that happen in the last two runs, Dallas?
Oh, yeah, it did.
Can you give us an example of some of the things they said?
I'll give you an example with someone else. We have another transgender person in Metro Atlanta whose name is Michelle, is on the city council, and she's been in the Atlanta paper any number of times. It's a troubled little city called Riverdale, I think. And every time there's difficulty and it comes up, the fact that she's transsexual is part of the story, when that's really irrelevant.
Mm.
Yeah. So you figure you'll have to deal with some of that stuff yourself?
A little bit. See, I was used to being in the media talking about the story, but I wasn't the story. So the first time I was ever the story myself, on TV 6 or 7 times talking about some murders we had down here in the early 90s.
Oh.
And it had been quoted in papers, Esquire and Playboy magazines and Associated Press, and mentioned on the Rush Limbaugh show.
On the Rush Limbaugh show?
Yeah, he read the AJC article, which was about silicone. I had given them a quote about silicone, and he was reading what I had said, and he said, the American Educational Gender Information Service, I'd like to see that operation. And all these people started calling me to tell me they had heard my name mentioned, and I'm like, why are you listening to Rush Limbaugh?
Good question, Dallas.
Actually, I would have loved to have called him up and said, well, Rush, if you want to see my operation, you're going to have to buy me a drink.
That would be a good strategy.
So I was used to dealing with the media, but I wasn't used to being the story, and it was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
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 I bet.
And so when are you gearing up to run?
I will, the 13th through the 17th is registration, and election is November.
Great.
And maybe I'll make it this time.
Will you go door to door?
I will put my flyers door to door, at least, and we usually have a meet the candidates meeting, and I'll be at that.
That's great.
Have you been active around the town? I mean, you say you know a couple hundred people, so you've obviously gotten out.
I've given some concerts. We have a clubhouse and a beach house and a gazebo where we have concerts. And,
that's great.
Once a month, at least we have a concert, and I've done that a couple of times.
You played your guitar?
Yeah, I played my guitar.
Oh, okay.
And when we had all of the difficulties 4 or 5 years ago, which involved a removal of a mayor and the threats from the state legislature to take our charter and everyone being really hateful to everybody else, I got fairly well known, so my name's out there.
Were you well known in a good way?
Well, it was we were on the side that was right, we're convinced, but so are the other folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I guess you did manage a majority that time.
Yeah, well, what happened was our mayor got thrown out because a couple of people ran for council in stealth mode and immediately voted him out of office. And there was no procedure, there was no process. So we didn't like that. I mean, he had done some things that weren't right, but we thought he deserved to be put through a process and with some citizen input and not ambushed like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a bit much. Let me just pause here for a second. You're listening to WMBR, to Gender Talk on WMBR in Cambridge, and we're speaking with Dallas Denny, who is a transgender writer and activist. Now, Dallas, you are editor, of course, of Transgender Tapestry magazine. And you want to tell us about how things are going there at the magazine and any news, anything? I remember getting an issue recently, and I remember that there was some concern about money to publish and things like that.
Yeah, we have an issue that's in layout now, which should be on the streets in September. But, yeah, for any nonprofit, money is always an issue. And The biggest expense with the magazine, of course, is printing. And Denise LeClaire, IFGE's executive director, has been really good at getting the costs of printing way down, but it's still hard times for transgender organizations.
Sure.
IFGE, of course, is the International Foundation for Gender Education, who publishes Transgender Tapestry.
And right.
Which was an amazing magazine for many of us to find a long time ago. I actually found your magazine, Chrysalis, first, and then Transgender Tapestry, and seeing articles written by transgender people instead of by people about transgender people was a really important step.
Yeah, I edited that magazine for your listeners from 1990 to 1998. It was sort of a labor of love.
And that was an excellent magazine.
And
sure
thank
was.
You. And, you know, it's been fun to do Tapestry. It would be great if we had, like, you know, a big money machine to hire writers and pay for features and send reporters out to get stories. But it's all done, you know, largely as a labor of love, too. I actually had the chance to see some very early issues of Tapestry when it was the newsletter of the Tiffany Club up there in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it was first?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And
it was
around,
Rosebuds.
Like, for more than, I think, 20
years. That was Rosebuds? I remember Rosebuds a million years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Denise sent me PDF scans of four issues, and it was really interesting to see it. And I found it back, you know, in those days also, Gordine,
yep.
when it had a listing in the back of all the organizations. Their internet was not accessible to ordinary people at that time,
for
and
sure.
it was so empowering.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That, you know, so many folks realized that they were not alone, and a lot of your writing, I think, has really done that. Now, I'm excited because you are turning out plays, and I understand. Oh Nancy, you have a question here first.
Well, I was going to say on the magazine. I'm just amazed, Dallas, every time I read it, because the writing is so topical and so good on so many issues there, and I really think it is the finest magazine of its kind out there. And it would be a shame to see it not. It would be a shame to see it go under for lack of financial support.
Yeah, I agree, and thank you very much. I'd also like to point out that at this point it's the only magazine of its kind.
Are you serious?
Well, the Renaissance News and Views has folded.
Oh.
The Girl Talk has become electronic only.
Okay.
The only other magazine that's out there, to my knowledge, is the one from Trias, which is specific to their members.
Yeah. Mm. And Trias is
Mirror.
A cross-dressing organization.
Mm-hmm. And Joanne Roberts publishes a magazine, and it's more...
It's a ladylike?
Yeah, it's called Ladylike, and there's a lot of photo spreads of people dressing up.
Obviously, it's oriented exclusively towards male to females, too.
Yeah, and there's some political content, but Tapestry is meant to be just a smorgasbord to reach all kinds of gender-variant people.
And it really deals with the larger issues as well. It's not just about putting on a dress or putting on a tie. It's about the identity issues and much more.
Well, sometimes I wonder that we've gotten too far away from that sort of thing, and I'm not averse to putting, you know, Windsor knots and foundation in the magazine, but largely the magazine is a function of what we receive, and people just aren't writing that. I think that's a reflection of the community as a whole.
How would people contribute to the magazine
They can send it to IFGE. The easiest way is to send it to editor@ifge.org. The internet makes editing a pleasure because the stuff comes in, you can reply immediately, and there's no stamps or envelopes involved, and you don't have to retype stuff. It comes in an electronic format, making editing easy. So,
and so
thank
you,
goodness.
You do take unsolicited manuscripts then?
We absolutely.
Right.
Largely, the magazine is filled with them.
Okay.
And we do, of course, accept stuff from by the mail.
Yep.
Dallas, this is Ethan. How are you?
Hi, Ethan. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I wanted to point out, too, Dallas, all the funny little editor's notes that you always toss in there. And sometimes your picture, you'll toss in a picture of when you were like 5 or 6 years old, just, you know, on some page, just
I
right
love
there.
That.
Yeah, I mean, why not have fun with it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
In fact, you know, I think the magazine could use a little more humor, and I love getting humorous articles.
Yeah.
I love how you tease Monica Helms.
She teases me, too. I mean, she talks about the... You know, the IFG corporate jet and Tapestry Tower.
Corporate jet. Oh, my. Yeah, so for everybody out there who doesn't know IFGE, it really is a very kind-hearted, community-oriented organization. And there is no more... more committed organization in terms of supporting transgender people and the growth of the transgender community. It's an organization that deserves the support of all of us, and a subscription to Tapestry is one way to do that. Another way is contributions. IFGE.org is their website, and you can contribute writing again to the magazine by sending it to editor@IFGE.org.
Yeah, I will, a little later, I will give the post office box.
Okay, great.
That's great. And you can also contribute like we did and a lot of other folks, monthly donation. It doesn't have to be huge, but it can certainly help the magazine and the organization. That's a good cause.
All of the magazines, having run a nonprofit for 8 years, it's just always a struggle to be able to buy stamps, to keep the lights on if you have an office.
Yeah.
It's just always a struggle, and people are kind to the organizations, but not enough are kind, and they're always struggling, and many of them fail. And IFG is almost the only one left that's got a national presence that's community-oriented. There are others that are more politically-oriented.
Yeah.
But a lot of people make their initial contact with the community through IFGE.
And IFGE has been there. They helped start the Southern Comfort, which has become the leading convention around transgender issues. They also helped start the first FTM conference and FTM International. I mean, IFGE has been very supportive of other organizations and anything that's been positive for the community, IFGE has been there, not just saying it's a good thing, but also providing, IFGE has given money to these things. So it's been generous despite the fact that it hasn't been rich.
Absolutely. I was at the organizing meeting for Southern Comfort back around 1990 or 1991, and basically what happened was Sabrina Marcus went to the IFG office and said, you know, why don't you make a transgender convention in the Southeast because we don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Marissa Sherilyn, who was then the executive director, said, well, we won't do one, but we'll come down and show you how to do one. And at their expense, IFGE sent 4 or 5 people, including Marissa, down. And all the organizations from the Southeast got together, and we all kicked in $100-$150 apiece and made Southern Comfort, which is a huge event, now in its 12th or 13th year.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Right. Yeah, great success story there.
Yeah, the IFG conference, which we've talked about too, is really important, and there were some really great things at the last one.
Yeah, I hadn't been in a few years, and I was really surprised at the vitality and the relevance of everything that was going on there. There's
some really exciting people
conference.
There.
It's changed in some positive ways, and we are highlighting some things from that conference in the next issue, the in-process issue number 109 of Tapestry, including, should I say...
No.
The two.
Oh, say.
Nancy well-deservedly won IFGE's Virginia Prince
That's
Award,
right.
which is the organization's highest award for lifetime achievement. And Nancy... was kind enough to let Phyllis Fry and myself and I believe Bryn Pranio and maybe some other folks accompany her on the guitar as she gave her acceptance speech and song.
Oh, yeah, that was
so great.
I so much enjoyed playing with you guys. The night before in the bar was even better. I mean, that was the best, just hanging out and playing songs with you guys. But it was so great that you joined me up there on the little stage or in the room there for that.
It's wonderful. And the only time I ever get to play with anybody is when I go to a conference.
Yeah.
You bring in your guitar to Fantasia Fair,
absolutely.
Oh, good. We'll look forward to
great.
That.
Let's go to Fantasia Fair for a minute and tell folks what's cooking for Fantasia Fair and what it is?
Fantasia Fair is really the community's, I guess, longest running event in its 22nd or 23rd year. It's held every October in the tiny little resort town of Provincetown on the very tip of Cape Cod, which juts off of the into the Atlantic from Massachusetts.
Just a beautiful setting. Just a beautiful place.
It's beautiful. It's largely almost exclusively a queer community. Very friendly and accepting. And the fair's a part of the annual calendar there and has been for years and years and was once quite expensive. 78, I believe, was the first year. And it cost a lot of money to go to the fair. Most of the attendees were very closeted male cross-dressers. That's really changed over the years. The organizing committees worked really hard to get prices down. And there's all sorts of people who come from, indeed, very scared first-time cross-dressers to post-op transsexuals and FTMs and MTFs. So it's really quite an event, and it's different from most transgender events because it spills through the whole town, and it's a week long, and it's very... You know, there's just lots of time to get to know people and have a good time and lots of things to see and do because it's a resort town.
And there'll be talks. People will be doing talks
every day. At the after-lunch talk is free to the public. On Friday we have the Fantasia Fair Follies, which is our always hilarious fashion talent show. And middle of the week, we have a fashion show, and those are available for $11 or $12 for the tickets.
That's great. You're not supposed to give prices here, but that's okay.
Oh, I am sorry.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit, so
yeah.
It's okay. I wanted to correct one impression that you gave about Provincetown being primarily lesbian gay. It's not. There are plenty of straight folks. There's a sizable fishing community there of Portuguese folks, and so there's a balance there. And just so that people don't come in with the wrong idea, that there are people who live there who are not queer identified.
Are they friendly?
Some are, and there are some who What happens is sometimes, like the high school kids, when they're playing sports at another high school, sometimes they encounter homophobic taunts because Provincetown has that reputation. And so then the high school kids feel bad about that reputation being pinned on their town. And so then there can be a little bit of blowback from that. So there, not everybody in Provincetown is thrilled with Provincetown being thought of as a gay mecca, but it is thought of that way, and it's not wrong to think of it as a great place to go that's very queer friendly, because it is. But it's not all queer folks there, just to set that straight, and just, you know, everybody should be, you know, thoughtful about the people around them.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, it is a working fishing village.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people there are Portuguese ancestry. And, of course, the availability of fish has made it really hard times.
That's
for
right.
Fishermen for the past 20 years or more.
Yeah, yeah.
So in many ways, it's a poverty-stricken town.
It is, but it's a great place. The folks there are nice and they're friendly, and they do appreciate our business. The prices are way down in late October when this thing happens. It's a great time to be there. It's not crowded like during the summer. It's so crowded, it's hard to cross the street for all the people there. I mean, it's just mobbed. But in October, it's nice. It's sort of like it's not like having the town to yourself because there's people there. But it's a really nice time of year to be there.
I should say also that because it's a week-long event, for many people, cross-dressers and transsexuals in transition, being a week in role can be an entirely empowering and almost overwhelming experience.
Absolutely. You know, this was the event, the first event that I ever went to. It was the first time I ever met another cross-dresser was at the Fantasia Fair. And spending a week... first of all, I only planned to spend a weekend there, and after a couple of days there, I called my boss and said, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back to work, sorry.
Ever again?
No, I went back to work the following week, but I was supposed to go to a conference from work that week. I just said, look, I'm sorry, this is really, what's happening is really important. And I had to give explanations when I went back, and so when I went back, I had to come out to everybody, but... there's nothing like spending a significant, this is a time to, you mentioned the words enroll, Dallas. And so that is, if you're a male to female, you get to dress like a woman all the time while you're there. If you're female to male, you get to dress like a guy and to be a guy for your whole time there. And if you don't, if you aren't in a place where you can do that now, it's a wonderful, delicious, exciting, fun, heartwarming opportunity for you to be with people who are very supportive of you in having this experience, who will be helpful to you. I mean, it's a wonderful place to discover brotherhood and sisterhood. And my favorite memories are the long hours we spent at night. My first week there, I never got more than 4 hours of sleep a night because I was sitting up talking with the other folks there. It was just, there were some nights when I never went to bed, literally.
That was the first time you were around other folks. Yeah.
It was just so moving to me.
Could I read a short poem?
Yeah,
please.
We'd love
this,
it.
This I wrote at or just after Fantasia Fair, talking about just that experience. I called it Sarah in a Suitcase. Midweek I saw her reciting joyously a poem just written of Sarah, escaped from her prison, tripping lightly down Commercial Street, shopping, dining, discovering herself, blossoming, growing, happy just to be. On Saturday night she sat in the doorway in her pajamas, singing, smiling, still drinking in the experience, still wearing Sarah's face, until she remembered her time was short and collapsed, weeping, weeping at the thought of the morrow. On Sunday morning she made it to brunch, dressed in her gorilla suit, her vulnerability packed away as carefully as her clothes, uncomfortable with our hugs, brusque, rigid, lest Sarah burst unbidden from a suitcase grown much too small.
Aww.
That really captures it, because Sunday mornings tended to always be such a sad time at the conferences, because people could live feeling who they really were that whole time, and then all of a sudden Sunday you had to put it back in a suitcase and go back into stealth, and it was really sad.
If you live full time, you can feel guilty on Sunday morning.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, I remember crying and crying Saturday night and Sunday morning.
And the conference is also open to gender queers too, folks that don't define.
There are a considerable number of significant others there.
Yeah, I would be there.
Yeah, and really, really high quality presentations. In fact, Mickey Gilbert, who is our program chair, last year and about 5 years ago, put together a symposium of gender professionals, who many of whom were themselves transgendered, who talked about queer theory. Transgender theory, and the first one was published in the International Journal of Transgenderism, and it looks as if the second one will be.
Wonderful.
Also.
Yeah, I remember that symposium. I remember talking about that.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing a lot of them. We're going to be there, too, talking about gender talk.
Yeah, I'm looking for you. Bringing your guitar?
Oh, no, I don't like taking that anywhere.
She'll bring my guitar, I think.
Bring a guitar.
But yeah, we'll bring at least one guitar.
Definitely, definitely have a guitar, because that was just too much fun to pass up. And I will do another video on the whole thing, too. It's great fun.
Yeah, I should say that the house parties at the fair are famous for lasting most of the night.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And there's lots of guitar playing.
Up at Rumors.
Although Rumors was, Rumors was sold this year.
Oh, that's right. I remember
that. We may have to find another place to see the dawn come up.
Well, we certainly will.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be my first one.
It's going to be wonderful.
We'll have a great time.
Bring a fairly heavy jacket. It's cold on the Cape in October.
Yeah. If you like go out on a whale watch, you will be cold unless you have really warm clothes.
And being a desert girl, I definitely will.
Yeah, it's definitely chilly time. You want to bring warm clothes, but it's a nice vacation.
It's really good for cross-dressers. Makeup doesn't melt.
Exactly.
It would today in Boston, let me tell you.
Yeah, actually, it's great weather for cross-dressers, now that you mention it.
I did, though, before we let you go, Dallas, I did just want to get to some of your writing. I just got to read, you had sent me two plays, and one of your plays is Down and Coming Out at the Ross Fireproof Hotel, a play in one act that has many characters that I'm sensing were based on yourself. And you even say it was a semi-autobiographical piece and that you really did live in the Ross Fireproof Hotel in a time period portrayed. Could you tell us a little bit about that and some of the other writing projects that you're doing?
Sure. I've always written fiction. I have a novel that I wrote last year called Chance Down the Mountain.
Oh.
That's about an Appalachian boy called Chance Early who comes out of the mountains because he's in trouble with the law in 1836 or 1834, and has a lot of adventures. And I was surprised to find that I had, just one day I sat down and wrote a play in about 2 hours.
In about this play?
When I write, it's amazing. It's like it's channeled. I mean, it may take
wonderful.
Me 6 months to sneak up on it, but once I start writing it, the novel was done in a month.
Wow.
And plays usually in a day. Now I'll polish them and change words, but and the second one really is autobiographical. 1968 or 69, I was out of high school. I was kicked out of the house for generally rude behavior, and I found this hotel in downtown Nashville. I was working as a busboy at a restaurant called Shoney's. And the room was $8 a week.
It really was.
For a basement room. The hotel was situated just behind the Ryman Auditorium where the Grand Ole Opry was then held. So you could see people coming and going through the back door of the Opry House.
Amazing.
Just behind the hotel was Printer's Alley, which was famous for its nightclubs and still is.
Mm.
One block down were the CD bars on Lower Broad, and one block up was the big department stores and upscale shopping. And I would get dressed and go out the door of this hotel.
Now, did you really dress like Marlo Thomas?
Oh, yeah. Marlo Thomas was... I was into the that girl thing back then. I just would not go out without my false eyelashes.
I love it. You had a fall?
I had a fall. I would blend my hair with the fall because my hair was short because there was no working as a boy.
Exactly.
And I would. I could just do all these things. I could go to the movie. I could go to Ernest Tubb's record shop.
Yeah, Ernest Tubb. What a trip.
You know, and I got, you know, whistled at a lot. So it was exciting and scary.
Sure.
Because being discovered would have been a very frightening thing. And fortunately, I seemed to pass very well in those days, and I did not get into trouble for people believing I was a boy.
Now, did you, when you lived in the hotel, one of the rules was no women in the rooms.
No women in the room. And I got, what happened was I would go out the back door. My room was in the basement, and I would leave the door almost closed, so it wouldn't latch, so I could get back in. And my day off was Monday, and I would usually go out Monday afternoon. And the clerk sort of was figuring out that Mondays were the days when the door was unlatched. So I was ready to go out the door one day, and I stuck my head out, and there's the clerk, sees me in the hallway, and I duck into my room and close the door, and he knocks on the door, and I open it, and he says, I'm giving the end of my play away, he says, what are you doing here? And I said, this is my room. He says, no, it's not. There are no women at the Ross.
That's right.
I'm going for the manager. So we went to get the manager. I rip my dress off over my head and rip off my underwear and wash my face in the sink and pull on my jeans and a shirt, and they're at the door, and they're like, okay, where is she? And I'm like, where's who? And they said, where's the woman you had on your room? I said, I didn't have a woman in the room. And they said, oh, yes, you did. You're going to have to leave. And so I tried to tell him it was
pretty
me, and they wouldn't believe me.
They wouldn't believe
you. You tried to tell him
it
was you?
And it was like 2 minutes earlier I had been dressed. So I incorporated that part of the experience into the
book. How funny.
Well, I found it really compelling because you have basically one character, but you have, what, five different aspects of the character?
Yeah, basically who they might have become depending upon different decisions that they made about dealing with their gender issue.
I love that. And they converse with one another, too. And
cool.
It's really powerful. I hope I get to see it someday.
Yeah, my first play was chosen, which is called Reunion, was chosen as part of the first transgender theater festival in New York.
That's great.
But at the last minute, there were some casting difficulties, I had bought my ticket to go see it. I was so excited, and I usually don't allow myself to brag, but I had allowed myself to brag.
Okay, here you go.
And at the last minute,
get you into trouble
apart.
Every time.
Yeah.
Oh.
But that one was just, I believe it was that one that was just published in an anthology.
Well, that's great. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I'm excited about that. I have written a lot of nonfiction, and almost most everything I've ever written has been published, but it's the fiction that's probably the dearest to my heart, and novels especially are just hard to get published.
Yeah,
you're doing really good, and I look forward to chatting with you about them, and hope I can sneak a peek at something else too.
Well, sure, thanks, and it's been great talking, and I had a great time hanging out with you two at the IFG conference, and I'm looking forward to October in Fantasia.
The guitars are coming.
So I'm bringing mine. Okay.
And that mailing address for IFGE?
Yes, I have it right here on the computer.
That'd be P.O. Box 229, if I'm not...
It is...
or is that changed?
No, it's...
That changed.
540229.
540229,
that's right. IFGE, Post Office Box 540229, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02254.
Great.
Or if anyone needs to call IFGE, can I give out the number?
Absolutely.
781-899-2212. There's people in the office 5 days a week, and they're great at supplying people with needed information to help them with their gender issues.
Yeah, it really is the one place that's continuously staffed by transgender people where you can talk to another trans person.
Absolutely.
Great stuff. Dallas, thanks so much for your continuing excellent work on behalf of the whole community.
Well, thanks so much. I enjoyed myself.
Good. Dallas, wonderful. And you are one talented lady.
Well, thank you, Gordon. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
we'll
Alice.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All righty. That was Dallas Denny.
She is just so creative and so good at what she does, isn't she?
She's a heck of an asset to our community.
Absolutely.
I'll say that. And she has been for a long time. It's time now for announcements. We'll do our announcements and then...